Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. My co-host tonight is Emmy-nominated NBC legal and political analyst, Dean Johnson. Dean?
Good evening, everyone. 2 weeks ago, we began a look at the laws, norms, and circumstances regarding your interactions with police officers. After a week off to run our annual tax preparation program, we now return to conclude our discussion of police encounters. Jeff?
As we began the first part of this broadcast, your encounters with the police range from the friendly conversation in passing to a consensual contact where information might be sought to detention or search or arrest, and all of these are governed not only by social norms but by policies and procedures and an ever-evolving body of laws with which the conduct of civilians, police, or other executive officers are expected to conform. Dean?
So just when is a contact consensual? How do you know when you're free to leave or whether you're free to leave? What are your rights when you're detained, when you're arrested? The guilty and the innocent alike share an interest in making sure that things don't go south. But what principles should guide you? How do you handle yourself? And to what extent can you say to a police officer, hey, wait a minute, and when should you comply, even if you believe the conduct might violate your rights?
Tonight, we want to extend our personal invitation to you to call in and share your thoughts. Give us a call. If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, call us at 415-841-4134. Again, at 415-841-4134. If you're outside the local dialing area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. But remember that just as a doctor can't diagnose your family member based on your phone call, our attorney guest can't provide you with legal advice about a particular case, and the opinions expressed may not be those of their respective clients or employers. The fact is, these folks are all here to help. Dean?
And once again tonight, we have a terrific lineup. David Uthman of the Law Offices of David Uthman and San Francisco Traffic Law Clinic emphasizes criminal and DMV defense and handles matters ranging from traffic tickets to the most serious felonies. Before practicing law, David worked as a peace officer in Santa Cruz County and was both a sheriff's deputy and a police officer. With offices in Oakland and San Ramon, Nabil Ahmed represents defendants accused of crimes in Alameda and Contra Costa counties in felony and misdemeanor defense, ranging from DUI to murders.
To all of our guests, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Dean. Pleasure to be here.
You know, I think it might be good if Dean and David, since you were both here, maybe recap a little bit where we left off and where we started when we began this broadcast a couple weeks ago.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. We started the discussion 2 weeks ago about talking about the myth that we all live in a kind of a police-free zone. And our guest pointed out that that's not really true, that actually police officers can come up and talk to you on the street just like anybody else. And when they do that, and they do that voluntarily, we call that a consensual encounter, which may not have any real legal implications. But we also said those consensual encounters can quickly ripen into something a little more serious. And sometimes it's hard to tell whether you're being encountered simply on a casual level with your consent or whether you're being detained or arrested or something maybe even more serious. So that's where we are. And I think I'd like to start off the discussion by saying, well, when a police officer does contact you, how do we know the difference between the friendly, consensual encounter and something that might not be so friendly? It might be a little more, shall we say, official.
Well, the best way to get clarity on it is to literally ask. You are, anybody that's having a conversation with a police officer certainly has the right to ask the officer whether or not you're free to leave. You can simply say it. Am I free to leave, officer? And if the officer says you are and you're so inclined, you should probably do so. So the first line of defense is to just ask the question straight up.
So here, you know, you raise an interesting question. You ask a police officer, am I free to leave? And he says, yes. I take it as a defense attorney, your advice would be, well, go ahead and leave. So that kind of raises a question in my mind. Is it ever a good idea to stay there? And is it ever a good idea to simply talk to the police officer and give him or her the information that they want?
Well, I suppose it's really a case-by-case analysis. If you know with certainty that you've done nothing wrong and an officer comes up to you and says something like, hey, I'm investigating a burglary in the neighborhood. I was wondering if you had seen any suspicious activity, something like that. Then, of course, if you're inclined to be a helpful, good citizen, good Samaritan, then of course, go ahead and engage with the officer. On the other hand, if you are somebody that is fearful of the police, has had negative encounters in the past, then perhaps you're not comfortable engaging at all, in which case you may be better off just leaving.
So if you're standing there holding somebody else's television set, probably not a good idea to start talking to the officer about your recent activities.
But, you know, with that in mind, with what Dean just said in mind, Nabil, how do you feel if you're being approached by the police? How do you know if you're the target of their investigation and maybe want to hightail it out of there versus maybe you're somebody that might have seen something that they want to hear from?
Well, if somebody wants to hightail it out of there when they see police approaching, I would assume that you mean that they are intentionally trying to evade any type of police contact. And that in and of itself may raise suspicion for a police officer to find that there is reasonable suspicion to detain or even perhaps probable cause to detain an individual.
Well, no, I understand that. But in the situation that David was just talking about and then Dean just updated, how can you tell if these police officers want to talk to you as a witness because maybe something happened that you could be of help, as opposed to you're squarely in the crosshairs and you're the one they're looking at?
Well, I guess that depends on the individual person and what they know that they've done. But if you see police approaching you and you have no reason to believe that you've committed a crime, or if you honestly harbor that type of intent that these police are simply contacting you to discuss anything, perhaps you know about the Super Bowl and who just won, or whether or not if you did see a certain crime that had been committed nearby, I think it just depends on the person knowing what exactly they've done. But I don't see police normally encountering people in the street for cold cases, let's say, for old crimes. So unless you committed a crime in the officer's presence, or you believe that you might have recently committed a crime that was witnessed by a citizen, and perhaps an officer may be in hot pursuit, or there are exigent circumstances to believe that individual needs to be arrested right away, then perhaps they may, you know, then that individual may give considerations to hightailing it if they knew that they did just commit a bad act. But usually if the police are encountering you, I'd say they were, should have no fears or concerns unless you knew or should have known that you committed a perhaps felonious conduct or committed a crime in the presence of that officer or others.
David, having been a police officer before practicing law, do you see it the same way? Is there any way that you would know? Maybe they're responding to somebody's false complaint. How do you know if you're somebody that they're investigating as opposed to whether they're innocently approaching you for information you might have that would help?
Well, really, the only way to really know is, again, to ask. am I free to leave? Are you investigating? Officers sometimes, oftentimes, they want to kind of blur the line a little bit and see if they can put you at ease, gain your cooperation. And then if they are, in fact, investigating you, if you are, in fact, the target, they can pounce, at an appropriate time. And if you ask at the onset, the officer is going to have to respond. They're going to have to tell you. And also, it removes any vagueness. You ask, am I free to leave? The officer says no, then it is a detention and you have certain rights at that point. The officer says yes, and you feel like maybe it's in your best interest to stop this encounter, then you should leave. That doesn't mean that the officer may still pursue you, may still try to detain you, but as long as you, the best that you can do is put it out there, essentially try to get the officer on the record. That way you're also somewhat protecting your own rights. And then however things go down after that is how they go down. But I think that puts you in the best position, the best standing legally, if in fact you do end up being arrested and prosecuted for something.
Let me turn it over to Dennis in Daly City. Dennis, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Dennis, if you're still with us, you're on the air. Looks like we lost Dennis. Dennis, if you can hear us, you're welcome to call us back at 415-841-4134. And we're more than happy to take your call.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about a little bit different scenario, following up on what David said, that the game between police officers, suspects, and witnesses gets a lot more subtle than that sometimes. In fact, I've encountered this situation three times in the last 2 weeks, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. Client comes into the office, says, I may or may not be a suspect in the case, but I just got a call from a detective. And the detective would like me to come down and tell, quote unquote, and it's always the same phrase, your side of the story. What's your advice to a client in those circumstances?
Wow. When that happens, don't fall for it. Honestly, do not fall for it. In my experience, both as a police officer, as a former police officer, and as a criminal defense attorney, my estimation is better than 50% of all the cases that end up being filed and prosecuted that were not on view arrests. So in other words, a case where the officer did not personally observe the crime, like, for example, like a DUI case, or if an officer sees somebody striking somebody else, if the officer did not actually witness the crime, more often than not, the way that the prosecution and the police were able to make the case was by getting an admission or otherwise having the person make a statement that was incriminating. So don't fall for that. And it is hard. It is hard to interact with a police officer. Your best course of action is to consult with an attorney and allow your attorney to interact with the officer. And any criminal defense attorney is going to tell the officer, hi, I'm representing so-and-so. Sorry, he's not talking right now. Maybe I could help you out with some information, something to that effect. But that is your first line of defense is yourself, and you got to keep your mouth shut or you're going to likely be in trouble.
One of the things that most people who don't work in the system don't know about is how easily you can prosecute a case by a method that we colloquially call the corpus cop-out, where they need only the slightest of evidence that something occurred or something's amiss, and then they roll in the statement. And the statement itself at that point is enough to convict. Everybody's nodding. Nobody's speaking. I guess that's got some teeth to it.
Yeah, Nabil, and there's in that scenario, there's a reason why they want you to come down to the station voluntarily, isn't there?
Yeah, I presume that they didn't get a warrant for that person's arrest, a radio warrant. And that means that there wasn't probable cause at that point in time, absent that individual statements that would be made to the police officer providing evidence sufficient to support the probable cause needed for that arrest. So typically when I have seen the scenario that you've presented, when an officer is asking a suspect, a person of interest to come in and tell their side of the story, usually that's already sounding accusatory in nature in and of itself. You know, when you have to present your side of the story, that would alert, should alert a reasonable, ordinary person of prudence to know that perhaps they may be in trouble for something. And yes, that would trigger I'd always say, hey, call me.
one of the most misunderstood areas of this is the whole role of Miranda. And of course, if you voluntarily come to the station, they don't have to give you Miranda rights, correct? Well,
why is that? Don't they have to give you the Miranda rights when you first meet up with them, when you first talk to them?
Well, it's got to be a custodial interrogation. And so when you voluntarily appear, there's no custodial detention. And so they don't need to tell you at that point about your constitutional rights because you voluntarily came in as a good citizen that you presumably are to go and speak to the officers and disclose whatever answers to the questions that they presented to you. So at that point, the officer doesn't feel the need under case law to tell this individual that anything they say can and will be used against them in the court of law, because at that point, they're just the person they're speaking to is presumably not alleged to have done anything wrong, or shouldn't be suspected to have done anything wrong if they are speaking to an officer voluntarily like that.
Is that why they always want to start those question and answer sessions by saying, you know, you're free to leave, the door's right over there, even if they're often sitting between that person and the door?
If I can jump in there, yes, it is. And there's also a real psychology to all of this as well. If you are, you know, if you as a citizen are at your home or, you know, with friends in a comfortable environment, you feel in control. If an officer comes to you and asks you if you want to would you please voluntarily come to the station so we can hear your side of the story, not only is the officer basically setting you up to potentially give incriminating statements without being advised of your rights, not only that, but you are losing your own kind of psychological footing in this matter. You are going from a comfortable environment like your home to essentially an alien and very uncomfortable environment. And, you know, the officer can say you're free to leave, but as he or she is saying that, they're escorting you through the front door of the police station, which is locked on the outside at least, and then escorting you to an interview room, which, you know, if you're free to leave, the interview room will not be locked. But here you are deep inside the police department, inside a little room usually with no windows, door is closed. Yeah, you're free to leave. I'm saying this rhetorically, but you're really not going to be feel free to leave at that point. You are most likely going to feel obligated to answer all of their questions. So there's a lot of reasons why you don't want to agree to go to the station to talk.
But wouldn't a lot of people just assume that if they don't volunteer to come to the station, they would appear as if they're guilty?
Absolutely, they're going to assume that. And the officers are hoping that you assume that. And that way you'll go with them. There's a lot of psychology involved. That's why protecting yourself, standing on your rights, it's not easy. There's you have to be prepared. And the way that you're prepared is you have to understand your rights. You have to know that you don't have to go to the station with them. You don't have to talk with them. You have to understand that. And then you also have to understand how to effectively communicate that with the officer. You don't want to be angry with the officer. You want to be polite but firm. You know, you're polite and say, no, thank you, officer. I really do not want to go with you to the station. And as a matter of fact, am I free to leave? I don't really want to talk to you anymore. And again, sure, it's going to raise the officer's suspicions, but the officer already has suspicions. That's why they're talking to you to begin with. So at that point, you're forcing the officer's hand. Does he or she now have enough evidence, absent your cooperation, does he or she have enough evidence to arrest you or go get a warrant? More often than not, at that stage, they don't have enough evidence. That's why they're trying to elicit a statement from you. But if they do, then they're going to make the arrest. They're going to get the warrant anyway. So you have to be prepared to essentially enforce or stand on your rights. It's not an easy thing to do. You have to think about it and, you know, listen to shows like this, so to speak, to have a framework in your head to protect yourself.
Now, Nabil, one of the points here I think that David is making is your status can change without notice. You can come freely into the station and be told, oh, you're free to go, answer all the police officers' questions and get up and say, well, since I'm free to go, I'm going to leave now. And then the police say, you know, that thing we said about free to go, that's not true anymore, correct?
So true, because at that point you may have already made enough incriminating statements to change it to the point where they now do have enough evidence to hold you and arrest you. It's just a no-win situation.
So at what juncture do they have to tell you your rights? And the reality, if I understand it right, is that you have the right to remain silent even before they tell you. But when do they have to tell you?
Well, as Nabil was saying, they don't have to advise you of your rights unless it's a custodial interrogation. So you have to be detained or arrested, and they have to be asking you incriminating questions. So that's the only time they're obligated to tell you that you have a right to remain silent. So again, you need to be an informed citizen and understand that in reality, you have a right to remain silent for any law enforcement encounter, but for something basic like your identity. Generally speaking, if an officer has a reason to detain or talk to you, you do have to identify yourself, but you don't have to go any further than that. And you just need to keep that in mind. And again, you can just tell the officer, I don't want to make any statements. I want to remain silent. That can essentially be your mantra, polite but firm. I want to remain silent.
Nabil, do you think it's a good idea to coach your clients that when they say no, thank you, I don't want to make a statement, they continue and invoke their right to counsel too? Thanks for asking, officer. I'd love to cooperate, but Nabil Ahmed is my lawyer, and, well, he's told me that all my dealings with the police should really go through him.
Well, at that point, if somebody's detained, they're in custody, they're being arrested for an offense, I've had clients on the phone with the police officers there saying, here's my lawyer. I've taken those calls at all hours of the night, multiple times in multiple different scenarios. I've read my name in police reports when that has come about. So it happens. We can read about it later in the police report too. And the prosecution is free to make any type of, there are constitutional limits as to what can be discussed at a trial down the road with respect to the defendant, invoking his right to counsel. And so it could be Griffin Doyle error at at a jury trial, and we're saying legal terms there, but essentially when the prosecution comments on the defendant's invocation of his right to remain silent, his right to counsel, and discussing that in front of a jury can be a basis for a mistrial. And so, if you are arrested and you are aware of your constitutional rights and you want to invoke them, and you want to invoke your right to remain silent and your right to retain counsel or inform the officers who your counsel is. And a lot of times the officers will know who defense counsel is. If defense counsel is someone, who's had enough experience for the officers to know them. So, it could be helpful. It doesn't necessarily, if the person keeps talking, if the arrested person keeps talking, keeps continuing with the consensual conversation with the officers, then they could be found to have waived their right to remain silent and the right to counsel. And so that's the downside to all that, is you keep talking and then you're going to talk your way into, more problems. Of course, the officers are highly trained and skilled and know what type of questions to ask for the crimes that they're investigating, and they have greater experience than most of the defendants when they are presenting the questions, very skillfully designed to get a defendant or a subject to incriminate themselves. So unless you have a highly skilled defendant, one that's been through the game or knows the rules of the games pretty well, the officer is going to win those battles more often than not, which means that a defendant's going to make statements that they wish they hadn't, and that the lawyer is going to eventually seek to exclude or attempt to exclude at any criminal proceeding, future criminal proceeding.
Is this one of those areas where TV has really poisoned the public? I've seen so many defendants come in, mine and others, and say, the police didn't read me my Miranda rights, so this case gets dismissed, right?
All the time.
Yeah, and that's not true, is it?
No. The more often than not, the people that are calling us, the defendants in these criminal cases, are searching for a way to get the case dismissed. So the Miranda rights is the first and most obvious way that people can think of regarding a legal right that they weren't perhaps given or provided, that may not have had to have been given or provided to them, but it allows them, they see it, the defendant sees that as an avenue or an opportunity to get their case dismissed. So generally speaking, when I have defendants that call me, let's say on a DUI investigation, just a simple, straightforward DUI investigation where Miranda rights do not necessarily apply, defendants say, I wasn't read my Miranda rights by the officers. My case got thrown out. I say, no, but, looks like the breath or blood test, making this up, occurred 4 hours after the time of observed driving. And that may create some problems that could help you get your case dismissed down the road. So always finding new and alternative avenues to reinforce the hope that there is something that can be, that there are defenses that that can be provided to a court that can mitigate the consequences of a crime, or sometimes even result in the dismissal of a criminal action against the defendant.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
Right where we left off, we were talking about the law of interrogation and reading people your rights and the pictures that we get from television. And we've seen so many movies and police shows that have the police with the hot lights and grilling somebody, a nervous suspect, in a controlled room with the lights really hot. And they're drinking very comfortably and the person is like sweating and the like. And this gives viewers the impression that this is the norm, that the police can haul you in and question you pretty much at will, and that the circumstances are pretty horrific. Is this an accurate picture, or are things perhaps a little more subtle and better thought out than that?
Or subtle. A good police officer, a highly skilled police officer, has really good people skills. So a good officer is going to be quite opposite, is going to create a situation that's quite opposite of what Jeff just described. A good officer is your friend. And a good officer is going to be very friendly, very kind of unassuming.
Until they're not.
Until they're not. Yes, they're going to lure you in. They're going to try to put you at ease. And then they're going to try to get you to eventually get you lead the conversation to where they want to go and get you to make an admission or a statement that will sink you, that will be incriminating, that will allow them to make the case against you. One other thing, too, I just wanted to throw out there is that if you are being investigated by the police, and it can be something even somewhat common, for example, there are times where people do drive intoxicated, crash their cars, and they don't stay at the scene, but their car does. They make it home, and then by, you know, hours later in the morning, the police are knocking on their door saying, hey, your car was crashed here. What happened? A situation like that, or any other situation where you know that the police are looking at you, are investigating you, it is really a good idea to contact a lawyer, retain a lawyer. And what I do for my clients in that situation is I give them a letter. I give them a letter on my letterhead that says, dear whatever law enforcement agency is potentially investigating them, dear law enforcement agency, I am representing so-and-so. So-and-so does not want to make any statements. So-and-so is standing on their constitutional rights. Do not talk to so-and-so and contact me. I'm their counsel. And then what I tell my clients is, if you're contacted, don't say a word. You don't have to say a word. Show the letter to the officer and remain silent. And that kind of, for me and my clients, that kind of keeps that situation a little cleaner for them. Plus, the letter can be evidence should they not respect the, you know, person's rights in that situation. The letter later can be used.
You know, it's important to point out that the interrogation techniques are very, very subtle. There was a thing called the Reed method, which actually led to the Miranda case itself, because it was a clever series of psychological tactics that police use to get people talking. Like, for example, you sit somebody down and say, you know what? We know you're guilty, and we just want you to admit that you're guilty. If you lie to us and say you're innocent, then we're going to know you're a really bad guy and you're going to go to jail. But if you admit that you're guilty, you can go home tonight. Those typical Reed method kind of question. The story was that Chief Justice Warren, when he heard about this, actually sent his secretary down to the FBI library to check out the textbook on the Reed method. And he was so appalled that he sat down that night and wrote the Miranda decision.
You know, Dean, we know that this is not horrific stuff. There's no torture. There's no hot wax. There's no pins or anything. This is just a family squabble where you beat up a family member. It is no big deal. It's not like this horrific thing where you were using knives or hot wax and boiling people, right? I mean, this is just a small thing, right? We just want you to talk a little bit about, you know, what really happened. It's not a big deal, right?
Right. And now they've taken it even further. The most recent studies seem to show that the best way to get information out of people is to be their friend. So that officer, when you come into the station and you sit down, where, of course, you're free to go, he's going to be the best friend you ever had. Would you like a cup of coffee? We can get you a sandwich. What do you need? You know, we just want to talk. We want your side of the story. We want to be fair when we send this to the DA's office, that they know what a good guy you and so on and so forth. Yeah.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, We're continuing our discussion about the laws and norms governing police encounters and the law of arrest. I'm Jeff Hayden, joined by tonight's co-host, NBC legal and political analyst Dean Johnson, and guests, attorney David Uthman and attorney Nabil Ahmed. Who better to discuss such situations? Why, that would be you, of course. If you have questions for my guests or wish briefly to share your own experiences, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. You don't have to jump in at the exact point we may be in our conversation. Whatever you wish to share with us, again, that's 866-798-8255.
You know, Dean, that was pretty interesting when you say that the officers were being friendly to get an individual to admit to something. Typically it's to admit to a small factual circumstance, an innocuous type of offense or crime that a defendant or a suspect believes that they can receive some type of leniency or mercy upon, wherein the officer, if they can get that particular suspect to make that critical admission, that's a piece in the causal link that might lead the officer to find that a bigger crime was committed. It's just a pieces of evidence, and when the officer can gain that type of trust from a defendant, from a suspect, and can get that suspect to keep talking, those little admissions wind up making the whole basis for a criminal offense that particular suspect could be charged with. It could also create new crimes that person could be charged with that the officer wasn't even initially investigating that person for. So just that act of friendliness alone, yes, can generate that type of response from a defendant. And also, I do correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, but I don't believe that an officer has a duty to be 100% truthful with the suspect during this type of questioning. So promises of leniency up to a certain point may not even trigger a case dismissal or any type of finding that that the statements made by a defendant were involuntary or coerced based upon the discussions had between the officer and the defendant. So
you make a great point, Nabil. I mean, a lot of times I find that when the police are really interested in getting one of my clients into the police station, it's precisely because they can't make those cases without the client's statement, and they're looking for that missing piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
And yeah, they often will minimize things, or they, as you say, they don't have to tell the truth. They can come in and say, look, we know you did it. We've got all the evidence in the world, but we know you're not a bad guy. We'd just like to hear your side of the story. Or they'll put you on a lie detector and go, hey, you know what? You flunked the polygraph test when in fact you didn't. Yeah. And so we know you're guilty, so you might as well admit it. If you admit it, you might go home tonight.
David, is that true? I mean, have you seen where officers use a polygraph as a prop and maybe just to get somebody to say what they want, or even say they're using a lie detector and maybe hook them up to a Xerox machine or something like that?
Well, I have not personally seen an officer go grab a polygraph machine that, you know, they're somewhat limited in use. However, in general, yes, officers do that. It is legal for officers to essentially misrepresent and lie and do whatever they want to try to get you to make an admission, to try to get you to make a statement, and it will be admissible. Now, if an officer goes really haywire, overboard, and the statement is still deemed admissible, later a fact finder, a jury, or a judge may decide that the statement that the admission was perhaps coerced to the point where, you know, they don't believe that it was a reliable statement. But the bottom line is that, yes, they can lie and they can make stuff up to try to get you to talk. It's legal. However, it's not legal for somebody to essentially lie to an officer. Under state law in California, there's no law that directly deals, that directly prohibits somebody from lying to an officer. However, it certainly could fall within the elements of a section like Penal Code Section 148, resisting, delaying, obstructing an officer. It's very, very broadly written. And under federal law, it is an outright crime to lie to a federal agent. That you can be charged with an outright crime. So yeah, it's not a two-way street. It's weighted heavily in favor of the police, in favor of the government.
I do want to take a caller, but before I do, I just want to make it really clear. David, as I understood it, nothing you said was intended to suggest that people should lie to the police. Usually, even if it's not committing a crime, which it can be in certain instances, but even when it's not, it's usually a losing proposition, isn't it?
Well, that's right. Yeah, no, that's my point, is that you shouldn't lie because you could end up being prosecuted because you lied. So yes, 100%, you should not lie. What you should do is remain silent. That's what you do have a right to do. And that's very frustrating for officers. Believe me, it's very frustrating. You personally may not get the satisfaction of saying something. I mean, so often we want to say things. It's just how we're wired. We want to defend ourselves. We want to make comments. We want to say things. It's harder to be quiet, but so much more to your benefit if you can resist the temptation and just remain silent. And believe me, the officers will be very frustrated and upset with their inability to get you to talk.
And as defense attorneys, we've all seen time and time again where somebody tries to come up with something on the spur of the moment, and it never, never helps. Let me turn it to Adam from San Francisco. Adam, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate the show. You guys are doing good work over there. I actually had a question that you literally just answered. My question was going to be, like in the movies and TV, you always see people saying, like, you know, oh, if I ask you if you're a cop or you're not a cop, are you? Because you legally have to tell me that you're a cop if I ask you that. But it sounds like that's not the case. And I have a second question that kind of piggybacks off of what you guys are talking about. And it's, you say the good, it's better to keep silent when talking to the police, but is there actually any law written where you can get in trouble for insulting or like bad mouthing a police officer? I know it's a bad idea and you should never do it in any case, but is there actually a law against it? And those are my questions.
You bring up a good point, Adam. Even though you can't lie to an officer as a defendant, definitely the part about telling an officer, oh, you have to admit you're an officer, that is most definitely an urban myth. But where you do have some leverage, I suppose, is that a police officer, their peace cannot be disturbed. So for example, if one citizen goes out and starts going nuts and screaming and profane and it's late at night and they're keeping you awake, that's disturbing the peace. That can be a crime. However, if the only person that activity is affecting is a police officer, you can't be arrested because by law, an officer's peace cannot be disturbed. So basically, yes, you can tell an officer to F off or whatever you want, you know, whatever, you know, whatever you feel like doing. You could do it, but again, they're human, they're cops. And depending upon how you do it and what you say and how angry they might perceive you, you still may end up with a lot of trouble on your hands, and you still may end up being arrested, and they might be trumped up charges. But you do have to remember the realistic side of it as well, that they are human and they can get upset and they could act out, and sometimes they get away with it too. Yes, you can essentially say what you want, but beware that you could still be inviting trouble.
You know, Adam, it's probably a really bad idea. Even when they don't get away with it, you make somebody angry who puts up with far more abuse than any of us. You have no idea, unless you've done it or work closely with people who have, the level of abuse that they put up with. So when you step in and say something angry or insulting, even when they don't get away with it, if they feel you've crossed the line and arrest you, maybe the DA won't even look at the case and decide not to file until you've spent a couple of days in custody. And maybe they don't get away with it because there's no case filed. But have you really gained anything? It's a really bad idea. Nabil, I know you wanted to jump in there too, and I didn't mean to cut you off.
Sorry about that, Jeff. Adam, I was going to say the following. If I was to pretend to be, you know, if I was to play police officer right now, if I was going to try to find a way to arrest you, if you were giving me a hard time out there on the streets, one of the first things I'd be thinking about is, are you obstructing or delaying me in the course of my duties while you're there antagonizing me? And if you were, I'd probably arrest you. I'd arrest you right away. So depending upon what you say, that would be one avenue. The second that I'd like to caution people about is perhaps if you're chiding these officers, make sure you avoid getting to race, religion, nationality, et cetera, because you may be committing a hate crime. And you can certainly, with your words and what you're saying, could be arrested on that basis for a hate crime. Sometimes your chiding on the officers may be considered a criminal threat. And you could be arrested. Other ways, perhaps if you are considered by the officer not to be able to care for your own safety or the safety of others, and depending upon what you're saying and the circumstances you're saying them under, they may take you in to evaluate you for a 5150 hold to see if perhaps you're all the way there, depending upon what you said or not. So, you could try it. Depending upon the officer, they may get you. Who knows?
Adam, quite aside from your legal rights, just remember what I've said before on here. It's a rule that I learned when I found myself in South America in the middle of a revolution. Never argue with the guy who's carrying the machine gun. Just use your common sense.
Adam, thank you for joining us in your legal rights. One of the things I wanted to touch on tonight, suppose you are being arrested and you know it's just wrong. It's just wrong for them to arrest you. To what extent do you have a right to use force to say, no, this is an illegal arrest? Can you push off them? Can you pull away? David, what do you think about that?
Boy, that's a tricky one. Generally, you cannot use force to avoid an arrest, even if you believe it is an unlawful arrest. You generally have to let the officer do what they're going to do, arrest you, and then you will have to deal with the unlawfulness of it later in court. Yeah. So no, it's not a good idea. And also it can really escalate the situation. The officer has no reason to arrest you. They go to arrest you, the officer does that. Well, you have a lot of rights. You can sue the officer civilly. You can file a complaint. You would have a lot of rights to remedy it. But if you instead turned around and reacted violently, Then the situation escalates. The officer potentially gets injured. The fight gets serious. The officer can end up using a weapon on you. It spins out of control. Then you go from being in a position where you could have fixed the problem later, where you could have gotten satisfaction and reversed the error, later, you go from that position to actually having to fend off real criminal charges and likely suffering a conviction for something that may haunt you for the rest of your life. So it is not, you should not physically resist. It's not a good idea.
Gentlemen, I have put my defense attorney hat back on, and I have to say the antithesis to all that, unfortunately, would be the scenario where we see George Floyd, where we saw play out, and when excessive force is being used, that gentleman, unfortunately, at that point in time, couldn't defend himself or use force to defend himself, but I do think that if he could have, he should have, perhaps, to save his life under those circumstances. And yes, it's a very difficult call as to what anybody should do under those circumstances. But every life is valuable. All lives matter, I guess. All lives matter. And so everybody has a right to protect themselves, unfortunately. Of course, it does create a very difficult scenarios for the individuals in those circumstances, but there comes the expression of some would invoke that they'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. And if you live by that philosophy where you will protect yourself if confronted with deadly force, then you can, and you perhaps you should.
But isn't the corollary to what you're saying, Nabil, and what you've been saying, David, isn't the corollary that you can use force to protect yourself from excessive force by the officer, but not to simply resist an arrest you believe to be illegal?
Yes, I think that's very accurate. I agree with Nabil. If you're in a situation that's life-threatening, it's literally life-threatening to your life, then yes, you will need to do what you can to get out of that life-threatening situation. On the other hand, if it's if it's just an unlawful arrest, you got to go along with it and remedy it lawfully later, so to speak.
And of course, the problem here is that there's a huge gray area. There's no app for determining what is and is not excessive force. And we always talk in court about it's judged by the standard of a reasonable, objective observer. But in those situations, nobody is a reasonable, objective observer. The emotions are as intense and as high as they can be, and often decisions are made in microseconds that people come to regret.
Yeah, and you know what? Let me clear some things up too here. First off, the person being arrested probably, I guess that's the person that we're assuming is making the determination that there's an unlawful arrest even being taking place to begin with. And, usually a judge makes that determination whether or not there's an unlawful arrest. So I don't want, the officer has his opinion that it's a lawful arrest. The defendant may have an opinion that it's an unlawful arrest. And so those judgment calls, those determinations are made in a courtroom. And for a defendant to go ahead and use force trying to play judge out in the field, I don't think is a good idea. It's not the best way to handle things. So even if the law does allow an individual to use force to challenge an unlawful arrest, it's certainly that's going to be an after the fact judgment call made by a judge, and I don't think most defendants should be taking those chances resisting officers like that trying to.
One of the things we haven't touched on tonight, and we only have a couple minutes left, but we've all spoken of when you're the one that the police want to speak to, when you're the one that's looking at being arrested. And we really haven't touched on any of the folks that might see something they question as a third party. For example, you're not the subject of the arrest, but you see something taking place involving the police that you think is just plain wrong? When is it okay to take out your cell phone and start recording them?
It's always okay. What you want to do in the going back to Nabil bringing up the George Floyd arrest, that is exactly what occurred in that situation. There were a lot of good citizen witness journalists that documented that incident. And but for them, probably we would have not had the conviction and possibly more convictions soon that occurred. If you see what you believe, if you see anything that you're questioning, you don't want to interfere. You want to stay at a safe distance. You don't want to obstruct, but you have an absolute right to take out your phone and record the entire incident. If the officer tells you to turn it off, you can politely but firmly say no. It is my First Amendment right to record and keep recording. Officer comes up, grabs the phone out of your hand. Well, you can't fight with him or her, but what they're doing is unlawful, and you've got it documented at that point. So I think it's very important to be a responsible, good citizen witness / journalist and safely document what's going on with your phone.
But the real question that I want to end with tonight is, how do you know where the line's drawn? Where does it drift from your documenting to your interfering?
Well, that's a case-by-case analysis, and you have to use your best judgment. So, you don't want to get so close where the officer could reach out and touch you. If the officer says back off, you probably should back off. But as long as you're at a reasonable distance away where they can't make the argument that you're too close, jeopardizing their safety or obstructing the arrest, you're in a good position and you can record. But as Dean was saying, there's no app for these type of things. It's a case by case, and you have to use your own judgment. But generally, you want to keep a safe distance, but still be close enough to document what's going on.
Sorry, Jeff.
I was just going to say, Nabil, any last words? We're about out of time.
Yeah, just to follow up on that point, just so long as you don't resist, obstruct, or delay the officers in the performance of their duties while you're filming, I think you should be okay and not run afoul of the law there.
But arm's length is probably not enough.
Probably not.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco, where we've been discussing the laws, the regulations, and norms governing your interaction with the police. Our guests tonight have been Oakland and San Ramon attorney Nabil Ahmed and San Francisco attorney David Uthman. Our final guest tonight has been all of you. Tonight's show was produced by Dean Johnson and yours truly. In upcoming weeks, we're now developing shows on such topics as the rights of children at school, on juvenile dependency, on where to go if your loved ones develop the dependency on controlled substances, and the laws regarding social media. Again, thanks to my co-host Dean Johnson and tonight's guests for joining us in this enlightening conversation. And especially our thanks to all of you for listening in. And back home at last at Back at the Controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe and have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.